Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski. Everything sucks. Raw was in your face this week. They actually marketed it, I guess as in your face Raw, but I thought it was Raw in your face. What does it matter? It's in your face. Who thought this was a thing? Like, why is this a thing? Raw in your face. Why is this Raw more in your face than other Raws? And if it's a special Raw, then call it that. Why is it in your face? Something being in your face is bad, right? That's an insult, right? Like, if back in the day, when somebody used to dunk on somebody, you'd say, "Oh, in your face!" You know, like, that wasn't like a, "Hey, it's great, we're both together, you and I, together, in this together, you and me. I'm in your face. You're in my face. Faces are, we're in faces." But if I say something is in your face, then that is me saying a synonym for in your face. If I say that to you, is suck on that. Or eat shit. That's a harsher version. But a synonym for in your face is eat shit and die, fucko. It's a synonym. It's harsher, but it means basically the same thing. But you know, it's also old. Like, I don't know if anybody actually says in your face anymore. Like, that was something from the 90s. Like, if somebody was in your face, this is how old it was. A Simpsons episode. I got to find out what year this was, because it might be predating what I'm thinking it is. A Simpsons episode. Yeah, it was, 1997. February 97. So they probably wrote it in the middle of 1996. Simpsons episode, the very famous one where Homer gets to voice Poochie, the new extreme character on Krusty the Clown Show. He's a dog. He's extreme. And the marketing woman, they're doing a satire of producers and stuff in Hollywood, because the writers of The Simpsons notoriously hated those types of people. So they wrote a satire of them. It's like, well, this dog is extreme. He, you know, he's too cool for school. You've heard of getting busy? Well, this is a dog that likes to get busy. Saying that your product is in your face is not only insulting to the people who are consuming it, it's also an outdated reference, but it is more recent than I would say that I thought Vince would be like, Raw, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Raw, how do you like them apples? Raw, why don't you take a 23 Skidoo down to the corner store and pick me up a pack of cigarettes? I don't know. What did they say back in the 30s? It's just a weird thing to call your product in your face for no reason, out of the blue. And then force people to call it in your face Raw over and over and over again. It's weird. It's a weird deal. This is lemonade-flavored energy drink. I also have lemonade over here. I'm tired. I'm always tired. Maybe I should get that checked out. Is that chronic fatigue syndrome? Is that bad? Anywho, let's talk about Raw and how in your face it was. My God. So apparently, Tom Phillips and Samoa Joe both have the night off. I guess. Michael Cole is in for Tom Phillips, and there's a bunch of different people in for Samoa Joe all night. The first person is Dolph Ziggler, and man, going from Samoa Joe to Dolph Ziggler is a hell of a downgrade. My God. So Drew McIntyre comes out, and he talks. This is the thing. This is your special episode of Raw, right? You've got all this stuff on it. You've got a champions versus champions tag team match. First time ever, the Street Profits versus Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro. It's a champions versus champions match. You've got a steel cage match. Seth Rollins versus Dominic Mysterio, which is like almost the exact opposite of a first time ever match. I'm pretty sure Dominic has only ever faced Seth Rollins or Buddy Murphy. Those are the only people he's ever faced. So it's not a first time ever. It's definitely not a first time ever, but still it's a steel cage match. It's a big time grudgy type stuff. So that's big. You got a women's title match, Asuka versus Mickey James for the women's title. You've got Keith Lee versus Drew McIntyre. That's just that stuff you've advertised ahead of time. Big time stuff. Champions versus champions tag match, women's title match, grudge match inside a steel cage, Keith Lee versus Drew McIntyre. Big time matches. And you still find a way to open the show with a lame promo. Well, let me tell you about what happened last week and the week before that. Oh, good. Please, Drew, tell us. This man kicked me in the head, so I kicked him in the head. Oh, good. We're all caught up. So he says, if Randy Orton is able to compete, he also says, I have a non-displaced fracture of my jaw. And if I get a bad hit in my jaw again, then it could displace my jaw. I'd have to have it wired shut. But I'm never giving up my title. They said they didn't want me to compete, take some time off, but I'd have to give up the title because, you know, it's Nash of Champions. It's Nash of Champions in 2 weeks. So I'd have all titles must be defended. So if I don't fight, I have to give up the title. I'm not going to do that. So apparently I have been cleared to compete in this match that isn't for the title at all tonight, where if I get a shot to the head hard enough, I'll have to have my jaw wired shut, which doesn't make any fucking sense. Why would you clear him for a match tonight that he could definitely, whatever. But he's like, Randy Orton might not be cleared to face me at Nash of Champions. So, but if he is cleared, I think that one of us should definitely leave. One of us is going to leave Nash of Champions in an ambulance. Actually, I think somebody should have to leave in order for the other one to become champion. So we're going to have an ambulance match. Just like we had between Braun and Roman at Great Balls of Fire. Remember that? Actually, the match wasn't terrible. And that was an amazing feud between Braun and Roman. We'll talk a lot more about Braun later. Braun won the match. Because all you have to do is put a guy in the ambulance, right? They don't have to drive away with him in it. You don't actually have to maim them so terribly that they must be transported via ambulance to the local medical facility. You just have to get them in the ambulance and shut the door. So Braun stood in front of the open door and Roman went to spear him and Roman out of the way. And Roman flew directly into the ambulance and Roman shut the door on him. So he won. But then Roman just jumped out of the ambulance and beat him up some more. And that was fun. So I guess we're going to have a ambulance match at Nash of Champions. We'll see. So Adam Pearce. Remember how Orton did that stupid photoshopped image of everybody who got punted? Well, McIntyre has his own graphics design class he took on lynda.com, and he did a little Photoshop of other people who he's claymored. So good for Drew. He's keeping busy during the pandemic. Adam Pearce comes from the stage. Orton might not be able to face, so now we have somebody to face him. So if Keith Lee beats Drew McIntyre tonight, then Orton can't compete at Nash of Champions, then Keith Lee gets the match at Nash of Champions. So stakes are raised. Lee comes to the ring, and it's basically the closest thing you can get to that moment at the beginning of Predator, where what's the matter, Dylan? The general got you putting too many pencils, and they do the clasp thing, and they just flex biceps for like 12 seconds. You know that meme that they do now? It's basically that, right down to the fact that one of them's white, one of them's black. Then they go to commercial. But we don't get to see what happened after that. What happened? Are they still shaking hands backstage? They walk to the back holding hands because neither man would let go. So we get Street Profits versus Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. And they keep talking about this brand-to-brand thing. I don't think they even know what the rules are. I certainly don't. So it didn't count. The match, the one time in a quarter didn't count last week when Shinsuke and Cesaro came to Raw and said, we want to face you on Raw. Wouldn't it be better if they like came to Raw and said, we invite you to SmackDown. We used up our one time to come here to Raw to invite you to use up your one time to come to SmackDown. I mean, that would make sense, because what it looks like to me is it looks like Cesaro and Shin. Oh, they're having Michael Cole call him Shin now, which just makes it so uncool. It's not cool when you do it, Dad. So Cesaro and Shin came to Raw twice in a quarter. That's not allowed, according to your own rules. This match is over much faster than I thought it was going to be, or maybe I'm just wrong, but I don't know. It also ends weird. Like, Ford is selling like crazy for Cesaro's uppercuts, and it looks great. And then Cesaro is doing a superplex to him off the top rope in Ford's corner. So Dawkins is able to tag himself in unbeknownst to Cesaro, and then hit a really lame frog splash, like really bad. Like, it's not good. That's Ford's move. Ford does the amazing frog splash. Dawkins doesn't. Dawkins has a very nice old D'Lo Brown sky-high powerbomb that sets up the frog splash. One, the first thing, the powerbomb thing he does, the old sky-high, he calls that the cash out. And then Ford's frog splash is called from the heavens. Cash out from the heavens. But Michael Cole calls the really shitty frog splash that Dawkins does on Cesaro to secure the win somehow the cash out, which doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, maybe Cole's just confused because he doesn't normally call Street Profits matches. Hey, something we should mention, I guess. Mandy Rose is on Raw now. Like, in storyline, Miz got her traded to Raw, which doesn't really make a lot of sense because they really are in desperate need of high quality women on SmackDown when you can't figure out how to get Naomi in a fatal four way to determine the number one contender on SmackDown, and one of the people you do get in there is Tamina, and also Nikki Cross, who wins that match and gets another title shot, which is, I think, if I'm doing the math in my head wrong, right, it's her 56th title match, I think, just in the past 2 months. So it's a lot of title matches that Nikki Cross has gotten. Also, people who are not on the show right now, Carmella, maybe it's her wearing the fur thing and those vignettes. Dana Brooke, missing in action. Sonya Deville had to go and deal with real-world problems, and good for her. Mandy Rose got traded to Raw for what? Don't know. I guess we'll find out. Meanwhile, on Raw, they have all kinds of women there who can't figure out how to get on fucking screen, including Bianca Belair. What? You're not... Oh, man, I'll talk more about this later, but Jesus Christ, that's just a weird thing. So Lana is backstage talking to Angel Garza about how it's unfair that Mickie James gets a title match because it should go to Natalya, who is the boat, hashtag boat, best of all times. Like, she put a Z at the end. And I don't know, man. Anyway, Garza is trying to have sex with Lana, like, at that moment. And Zelina walks up and gets rid of Lana. And Andrade's there. And Andrade and Angel Garza argue over who was more at fault. By the way, second week in a row, no Demi Burnett. I'm calling it now. Retribution murdered her. Retribution murdered Demi Burnett 2 weeks ago on Raw. We didn't see it. It happened off camera. It was horrible. They used lead pipes that has crushed her skull. It was disgusting. She had to have a closed casket in kayfabe. I'm sure she very well may be a lovely woman in real life, but her character deserved to die. I'm glad she's dead. Anyway, moving on. Because... Angel Garza has moved on. He doesn't give a shit about Demi Burnett. He wants to get in the pants of Lana. By the way, happy for you, Rusev, for getting away from this awful trek. But he, for Garza and Andrade start yelling at each other, and Zelina's like, you know what? Enough. I'm out of here. I'm walking out on both of you guys. I don't need you guys anymore. So then Andrade and Angel Garza come to blows. And they're beating each other up backstage, and we never see them again. They don't have, like, anything later. But Zelina goes, you've ruined all of our chances at Tag Team Gold, which is so weird. That you couldn't just let these two guys work great together. You had to make them pissy all the time at each other. Like, these two hot-headed Latinos can't get it together and be friendly. Why do you have to write them like this? They don't have to write them like this. You could write them as a great cohesive unit. Are you kidding me? Just letting Andrade and Angel Garza work at the height of their powers, using really good tag team wrestling to be champions for 6 months. We couldn't figure out how to do that. No, because the Street Profits have to have the belts forever and never defend them because they're having a series of anything you can do. I can do better. I can do anything better than you. No, you can't. Yes, I can. No, you can't. Yes, I can. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Fuck you, matches. Not even matches. Exhibitions of shit. With the Viking Raiders, who you've also ruined. Oh, good. Good. So the Hurt Business comes out, including Cedric Alexander. They all look great. It's that they are a first class upper mid card heel faction. They look the part. All the guys seem intimidating. MVP is a fantastic mouthpiece. Bobby Lashley's the heavy. Shelton Benjamin is a utility player, and very good at that. And Cedric, now they have a fast guy. a fast little guy who could be cocky and shit and get into scrapes that Bobby Lashley has to rescue him from. It's a great little heel faction. I love it. I'm a big fan of the Hurt Business. There, I said it. I was not. I am now. They've won me over, especially you, MVP. You're doing fantastic work. I missed you, Montel Vontavious Porter. So, Cedric talks about how everyone was pissed at him for churning on Ricochet. He's like, this is a business. This is my job. I'll do whatever it takes to succeed. I got beat up every week by the Hurt Business. By these three badass dudes. I didn't want this to continue, so I stopped. All right. I mean, he makes good points. He does. I kept catching beatings from these guys over nothing that I did. You know what I mean? So I don't know. You know, they've completely dropped Mustafa Ali from this angle entirely. He was on Main Event last week for Sakira Tozawa. I didn't watch it. I was too depressed. He's on Main Event this week. You can tune in on Thursday and watch it. Against Humberto Carrillo, another guy who they just said, hey, we have plans for this guy. No, we don't. I'm going to pitch something for Mustafa Ali to do. At the end of this thing, they're never going to do it. But it actually would make sense. But they're never going to do it. I'll pitch that later. But yeah, he was a part of this thing. Like you had him come back after 7 months off specifically to back up Cedric Alexander and Ricochet. And then he disappeared. You didn't want to use him anymore. It's utterly insane. It's an insult. But he makes sense about all this stuff. Can't beat him, join him type stuff. But not in a whiny sort of way. Just like, seriously, why am I getting beat up for being your friend? I don't even like you that much. So then out comes Ricochet and Apollo Crews. You're selling him out, whatever. You're too weak-minded. You get listen to MVP, blah, blah, blah. So Ricochet and Cedric is a very fun match, as you would expect. I wouldn't mind watching these guys wrestle a few times if you actually let them really do it and wasn't broken up by commercial breaks and stuff. But Ricochet had an all-time top three sell of a lumbar check. I think the only one that I know is far better than that one was Leo Rush selling it. Like Leo Rush, like bounced up and almost did a handstand, like walked on his hands for a few steps before he fell down. I miss that guy, man. I fucked up that guy so bad. The Hurt Business stands in the ring and celebrates, right? Now the lights go out and we get Retribution up on the screen. And one of the women starts talking, and the consensus is Mercedes Martinez, who I would be fine with. Seems like she had a really short run in NXT, but she's too good to waste her time down there. She's getting up there in years. I don't think she's any close to retirement, but why waste your time in NXT? Yeah, sure. Get her up here. Let her do stuff. I mean, don't ruin her, but let her do stuff on the main roster. So she talks for a while. And then it's very obviously Dominik Dijakovic, even though they changed his voice. He's so their deal is now that this promo spells it out for us. We always thought, hey, Retribution would be weird. What are they rebelling against? Are they basically, is this the Nexus again 10 years later? And spoiler alert, yeah, it is. It totally is. Because the PC didn't exist 10 years ago. It was like, you know, NXT, the first class, being pissy about being an NXT. They wanted to take everything for themselves. And these guys were ruined. They went to the performance center and they had dreams of being something, and they were lied to and cast aside and weren't allowed to be themselves and blah, blah, blah. But of course, because it's a heel promo, they have to mix in like metaphor and stuff.
While you enjoy your last days of oblivion, we are going to gut your reality.
I don't know how you gut reality. Like, is it, do you use a knife to gut reality? It's a weird thing. But anyway, we
will show you exactly who we are,
says Dominik Dijakovic. I'm fine with Dominik Dijakovic being a major part of it. I just don't think he should be the ringleader. I don't know who should be, but I don't want it to be too much of a swerve. But okay, I'm gonna Mustafa Ali pitch here because it fits better here than what I was gonna do it. These guys, their whole thing is, we were sold a bill of goods. We were given a raw deal, and therefore we're gonna take it out on you. All these wrestlers who did get the spotlight that we wanted. Also, we hate the WWE Universe for rooting for those people who stole our spots. And I think that the one of the most positive guys out there who got fucked over more than a lot of people is Mustafa Ali. Wouldn't it be interesting if you had a guy who came out and maybe he doesn't actually succeed in this, and certainly he wouldn't, but what if he came out and talked to Retribution and say, guys, I know, I've been there. I got injured by Randy Orton right before Elimination Chamber, and I wasn't able to be in it. And I got to see the guy who replaced me, Kofi, go on to have a crowning achievement and become champion at WrestleMania. But did I resent him? No, I cheered for him so loudly because he deserves it. I look at all of you and I think all of you deserve a good shot at this. I have been kept down. I had my hands wrapped around the Money in the Bank briefcase. Brock Lesnar comes down, kicks me off that ladder. I went to management and I said, give me a match with Brock Lesnar. They laughed in my face. I said, I'm going to go out every time I have the chance. I'm going to prove you made the wrong decision. And every time I go out, I feel like I do that. You may knock me down. I'll never stop getting back up. I don't blame the WWE Universe for this. It's not their fault. I want to be able to give them everything I know I can give them every time. It's not their fault. It's not all these other guys in the ring. It's not their fault. They're out there trying to do the same thing I am, same thing you are. Entertain the masses and put food on their families' tables. You know who it is? And this is how he becomes a huge fan favorite. It's the McMahons. They're the ones who've done this to us. You could actually have Mustafa Ali lead Retribution as a force for good. They're never going to do it. But oh, God, wouldn't they be huge baby faces if basically they declared war on the McMahons? We don't care about, we're on the same size, you guys, everybody else. If you don't want to join us, that's fine. We're going to tear down this shit from the inside. They'll never do it. But it does make sense for somebody who actually has been fucked over by management to be pissed. I don't know how fucked over Mia Yim and Dominik Dijakovic have been. Shane Thorne, fine. I mean, he got that injury and then got put in nowhere things after he came back from his injury. Dio Madden? Sure. Yeah, he took an F5 on the table, and we haven't seen him since. Not really. He could be pissed. Mercedes Martinez, overlooked for her entire career. Finally brought in. Told she's too old. She can lie about that. I'm not sure if she was told, but she was told. But I can imagine she was told that. Stuff like that. I don't know. Mickey James has a interview with Blonde, not Charlie. I don't care. Do you care? I don't. It's a stupid... They do this thing where they have people interviewed and they say a bunch of platitudes about nothing. You know? They talk in riddles, or they just say, I'm going to go out and try my best. Oh, good for you. Mickey James versus Asuka is okay. You know? Oh, first we have MVP pitching the Hurt Business as like new heads of security for Raw. And Adam Pearce was like, thank you guys for volunteering. He's like, volunteering? We're a business. We'll talk. Let's go talk about money. So Mickey James and Asuka, we have formal ring introductions. That's nice. Good for them. The match is the match. The finish is the weird. I don't know what the thing was. Asuka has Mickey James in the Asuka lock, and Mickey is fighting out of it. She is definitely not tapping. The ref calls for the bell. Mickey's eyes go wide, like, what did you do? I don't think Mickey was supposed to win the match, but that definitely wasn't the proper finish. And then the ref goes over and talks to Greg Hamilton. Greg Hamilton gets on the mic and goes, I've been told Mickey James is unable to compete. So Asuka's the winner. And the way Greg Hamilton went like super fast through all that shit. Yeah, the ref knows he fucked up. Mickey didn't like that. Especially they blamed it on her being unable to compete when there's no way that she even told anybody. Then Asuka standing in the middle of the ring and Zelina Vega comes out. And Zelina Vega says that she's wasting the prime of her career as a manager for these two dopes. I'm not going to waste the best years of my life doing that anymore. I'm championship material. I'm not scared of you, Asuka. I'm ready for you and I'm ready for that. And she points to the chest. Now, if you want to say Zelina Vega gets into a battle royal or a fatal five-way or whatever, and she wins that match to become number one contender to Asuka, I will allow it. Zelina Vega has been used sparingly as an in-ring competitor and almost entirely as the manager for Andrade for a long time, going back to NXT, and also now for Angel Garza. Why she gets to walk to the ring and say, I'm a title contender now, is beyond me. Why is Zelina Vega getting a title shot? I mean, you could have left this Mickey James thing versus Asuka until, you know, Nash of Champions, but you looks like you're doing that now so you can get to Zelina Vega. And I'm just wondering when we get Bianca Belair. Where is she? What is she doing? Where's she at? Why are you keeping her off TV? We don't have anything for her. Then find something for her. Find something for her. She's one of the... She has more star potential, I think, and crossover star potential. That this woman, you get her on any like she could go on. Do the people even go on Fallon or Colbert or whatever anymore? But like she could go on there and light the place up. She has all kinds of just, she's oozes charisma. She's so fun to watch. So obviously confident. It's infectious. Why wouldn't you put that on your television show? I don't understand. Help me. Tell me why. It makes no fucking sense. It's also, you brought Mandy Rose over. Is she ready to be somewhere competing for something? Because if so, yeah, Mandy Rose should be getting title shots before Zelina Vega until you have Zelina Vega win a few matches, you know? Like, have Zelina Vega versus Billie Kay or something. You did, that's the other thing. You did this Peyton Royce versus Billie Kay thing last week after you split them up. So now what? You split them up. You had them fight each other last week. This week, what? Nothing. So you, what was, where was the urgency for splitting them up? So you could do what with whom? It looks like you had Peyton beat Billy so Peyton can move on to something. But what is that? If you want to do Zelina Vega versus Asuka, then when you have Zelina come out and confront Asuka, then I hate fucking promo parades, but have Peyton come out after Zelina and say, ah, not so fast. You've been over there just managing these people. No. I broke up with my best friend because they made me. I have a singles career now. I'm going to start it by facing you, Zelina Vega. Since you think you're not a manager anymore, let's go, you and me. And then maybe you could say, okay, by virtue of Zelina Vega beating Peyton Royce, Zelina Vega gets a title shot. Can you, like, just think about that. By virtue of beating Peyton Royce, Zelina Vega gets a title shot. Makes zero fucking sense. But you had to, let's make sure and get Nia and, well, not that I love Nia involved, but let's be honest, she has more of a right to it than Zelina Vega. But you got Nia and Shayna out of the singles title picture by making them tag champions. So we got Mickey James. We got this husk that used to be Natalia, talked about as having these things, but she's not going to actually. Is she really? I don't know. It's just, maybe next week they're going to have Zelina Vega versus all these people in a fatal five-way or whatever, and Zelina Vega is going to somehow win. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them. Maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but it doesn't make any fucking sense for her to come out and say, I deserve a title shot. What the fuck? Yeah. So, Charlie Caruso interviews Keith Lee. Keith Lee is a brilliant speaker. He doesn't sound like a wrestler. He sounds like a professor of something. He really does. And which is interesting that they're letting him sound that way, because that's usually not Vince's bag. But he's also makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't want to take advantage of my friend's injury in order to win, but I need to be champion. So if I have to do that, I will. Okay, good. I guess Ivar's hurt, so Eric wants to take up revenge for Ivar jumping out of a ring and falling on himself. So he faces Bobby Lashley. Eric does not last long. He kicks out of the Yokosuka Cutter, which they call the Dominator now, which is not the Dominator. The Dominator is the Dominator. That's not the Dominator. And then he kicks out of that, but then gets put into the Hurt Lock, which I do like better than the full Nelson. Eric taps out. So we find Kevin Owens backstage. Apparently he's facing Aleister Black. And in a real match, not in a Lucha Underground, I will say Lucha Underground, Raw Underground match that starts, gives you 2 minutes, goes to commercial, back from the commercial, shows you part of a match, back from the commercial, shows you more of the Raw Underground match, back to commercial, back to something else that happens, an interview backstage, back to Raw Underground, shows you the finish of that match, which isn't really a finish. So Owens, he's really good at talking, but they give him such stupid shit to say. Like, what do I feel? What am I going to do? What am I worried about? I'm worried about making sure the beating that I give Aleister Black makes him regret having attacked me. But he says that like six different ways, and it's just the same shit over and over. Like, he's better than that. He says it well, but it's just in a circle. Hey, it's Raw Underground. Last week will be nothing compared to this week. Braun Strowman shows up. I missed this part when I was rewatching it. I must have been fast-forwarding through commercials and missed it. I was like, why is Braun Strowman here? But apparently he shows up and he says, get the hell out of my way. I want to go in. I don't know if he actually said this, because this is not my notes. This is something I'm finding online. Tells Shane,
send me your best fighter so I could send him home to his mama with a pocket full of teeth.
So Strowman is on Raw. I don't think this is like a trade or whatever, but it probably is. They're probably just going to like say it's not until it is, and they say it will. I don't know. It's weird, this whole thing that like just anybody can show up anywhere and we'll justify it later. So it's Ziggler's gone from the desk and MVP's there, and now we get Seth and Dominic. Seth and Dominic in the sales cage match. Seth is talking to Murphy, and Murphy apologizes, and Seth said, "That's fine, it's fine, because we have a big plan, and you're a big part of it, and you understand? Yes, sir. Great." And then he grabs her by the face and he shoves her in the locker. He says, "The big part of my plan is that you're going to stay back here so I don't have to deal with any of your stupid mistakes. Do you understand?"
"Yes, sir."
"Do you understand?"
"Yes, sir."
So anyway, I feel like it's been since like January, earlier than that, right? That Seth turned heel on Kevin Owens, and he originally was with AOP, and then recruited Buddy Murphy, and then recruited Austin Theory. But AOP, one of them got hurt, so not allowed to have just one of them there. So they released AOP, but I can't help but think, why couldn't the other AOP have been there this whole time helping Seth? It would be a lot better if Seth could order that guy. I think it was Occam was the guy who was still healthy. He could order Occam to beat the hell out of Murphy. Like, it would feel more like, you know, getting jumped by your own gang. You know, it would feel, as opposed to like one guy making somebody else cry while saying, "Yes, sir." Earlier in the night, they interviewed the Mysterio family, familia. I'm going to talk about in a second about how good Dominic is in the ring against one guy. Let's be clear. I don't know how he would be against anybody else. And the answer is very good for how young he is and how experienced he is. He's very good. He's terrible at everything else having to do with wrestling. Like, terrible. He has the wrong look for it. He doesn't appear. I guess he's supposed to not be confident, but he says he's confident. He looks like a little lost boy who just wants to go home. They got these big doe eyes, and he's got this expression on his face at all times. And he's got all the just world-beating charisma of like a stump. Like somebody wanted to cut down a tree on their property, but then didn't get the actual professionals to remove the stump, but just a stump sitting in the middle of their front lawn. Just a stump. Just a stump. That's who Dominic is as a personality. I bet you he's more than that as a real personality, but on screen he's like, Seth, I'm going to have to beat you, even in a steel cage. I'm going to try because it's very important that I do the best I can for my family to make them proud. They also write him like a fucking NFL quarterback doing a press conference where they're like trained to say nothing. Like, what do you think about your opponent this week? Tough opponent, pretty good opponent. Do a lot of film study. We think we're ready for him. Think we're going out and get a good W. And then you ask them another question and they repeat the same fucking answer because they're trained to like not give anybody bulletin board material. It's a bunch of bullshit. It's awful. It's nothing. They're trained how to say nothing artfully. And that's the kind of bullshit they're writing for Dominic to say. And it does not come off well. Unfortunately. Because I say unfortunately because he's already got all kinds of talent elsewhere. And it's a horrible fucking insult to people like Mustafa Ali, who is the absolute total fucking package, has 10 years of experience on Dominic, could have this match and better with Seth Rollins, but we're doing it because fucking nepotism. Because he's Ray's kid. If he wasn't Ray's kid, he wouldn't even get signed to NXT. They'd fail him out of promo class. You know, when you go in and you're like, okay, you can do forward rolls and you can do, you know, a back bump. Good for you. Let's see how you handle the mic. And they'd be like, okay, great. Next time, come back when you can cut a promo. They'd never fucking sign this guy. Is he really good in the ring? Sure. Is he really good for how young he is? He's great for how young he is. Yeah. Does he suck at everything else? Oh, you betcha. He can get better. He can get better. He's just not at all ready for this spot on this. They say he's one of the top two or three guys on the fucking show. Internal memos and shit. He's one of the top two or three guys. Top two or three baby faces on the show. He's certainly being booked that way, but I mean, he actually is. I mean, it's not just Mustafa because he's my boy and I love that guy and I want to see him do well. There are a whole bunch of other people you could be using. Who would be better? Whatever. Now, again, was this match good? Yes, it had all kinds of great drama. He's doing really good. He's showing more personality when he gets crotched on the top rope than he ever has with a microphone in his hand. He does a really cool, like, sit-out powerbomb spinebuster thing for two where he stacks up the legs. It's great. Buddy Murphy comes down anyway just because he's so beaten, and I appreciate the consistency of character that when he was at his lowest moment after losing again to Aleister Black, Seth Rollins was the only guy who offered him a hand and said, I want you. I need you. Come help us. And Murphy feels like he owes him a debt because of that. Makes sense. I wish they would spell it out more and actually use that, mention that particular thing over and over again. If you're going to actually hit us over the head with something, hit us over the head with good storytelling. Anyway, he gives him a kendo stick and lets Seth use that. At one point, Dominic is headed toward the door, by the way. No more doors in steel cage matches. That's shit. So he's heading for the door, and Ray grabs a hold of his arm and is going to pull his son out the door, which is not okay. I mean, I guess anything's legal. It's a fucking cage match, but really, Ray? You want your son to win the cage match that way? So Murphy grabs Ray and throws him into the barricade, beats him up, and then slams the cage door without looking at what he thought was going to be Dominic, but whoops, it's Seth Rollins. Oh, he hits Seth Rollins with the cage door. Oh, no. Buddy Murphy's so upset because he knows he fucked up. Oh, no. So he goes around and tries to stop Dominic from getting up over the cage wall. And then he climbs up there to stop him, and Dominic knocks him off, so he's down on the floor. Seth eventually climbs up there, hits the old superplex, followed by what Michael Cole insists on calling a Falcon's Arrow. Who is this Falcon? And why does Seth have custody of his arrow? Why is Seth using Falcon's arrow to try and pin people? Seems like Falcon should try and, you know, at least, I don't know, does Falcon at least get, I don't know, royalties every time that his arrow is used by Seth as an offensive maneuver? I think it's like, seems like Falcon got a raw deal out of this thing. I think that he should probably talk to a lawyer and see if he can get some percentage points on, because Seth is using Falcon's move more often than Falcon is. As a matter of fact, I haven't even seen Falcon wrestle in a long time. Whoever this Falcon is, he needs to get his arrow back. Pronto. Also, you can't have Seth do the Falcon, the superplex into Falcon Arrow. It's a huge, amazing move. Dominic shouldn't kick out of that. He just shouldn't. That should be too much for a guy like Dominic. He should finish him with that move every time they face him. And eventually, I'm talking about a long time from now, after they haven't had a match against each other in a long fucking time, Dominic kicks out of that. And that's a big deal. But, yeah, whatever. Seth taunts the Mysterio family through the cage wall. Dominic tries a roll up. Seth kicks out and immediately hits the stomp. Gets a pinfall. And he goes out and he beats the hell out of Buddy Murphy. He comes over and says, Buddy Murphy, come here. Gives him a hug and then beats the ever-living bejesus out of him. And then he, as he's walking past Angie, the Mysterio mom, he says, hell of a job you did with that one. I hope she turns out better. Motioning to the daughter. Now, everybody gets into the ring to check on Dominic, but the daughter, as she does, she walks by crumpled up Buddy Murphy and puts a hand on his shoulder to check and see if he's okay. And Buddy is touched by this. And the camera lingers for a bit, which makes me think one of two things. One, the thing I don't want them to do is to create some kind of romance angle between Mysterio's daughter and Buddy Murphy. Please don't. Everyone seems like, oh, are they going to do... Please, just can we not? I don't know how old she is, but Dominic's 23. I think the daughter's younger, right? Buddy Murphy's in his mid-30s. We don't need like a 34-19 age difference when we're doing the thing with the Velveteen Dreams and the Austin Theories. Can we not, please, let's not do that? I don't know how old she is, but she fucking looks like she's still in high school. So let's not do that. But what I hope it was is it there it's good storytelling. This communicates to Buddy Murphy that even the family of Buddy Murphy's enemy, who mercilessly beat him last week, as this daughter did, still sees him as human and is checking on him because he was badly beaten. And so maybe it teaches Buddy Murphy to have some self-worth. And Buddy Murphy, now that it looks like Seth has moved on from the Mysterio clan, maybe Buddy Murphy can turn babyface and have matches versus Seth, where Buddy Murphy gets to shine because he's one of the best guys you have on the entire roster. Maybe. Can I hope? Am I allowed to hope for things? So Dolph Ziggler beats some enhancement talent. Who wants to piss to Ziggler next? Asks Shane in Raw Underground. So Dolph Ziggler was out there doing commentary, went backstage to get his mandatory Raw Underground on. Riddick Moss steps up. Riddick Moss is the only thing he can do is get on Raw Underground and be just, again, he's not a fighter. He's a big guy who used to play football. He's not an MMA dude. He looks great in a pair of jeans and a tank top. Good. That doesn't make you a fighter. So he and Ziggler basically, you know, fight to a standstill. I mean, they're beating each other up, basically. But then Braun Strowman storms the ring, runs over both of them. Huge choke slam to Moss. Ziggler comes out of him and Strowman hits the Yokosuka cutter on him. Strowman's serving somebody else. Back from the break, and we get Drew McIntyre and Keith Lee talking. Drew McIntyre says a few things about how Lee's upset for getting involved in matches. I waited last week until Randy hit the cutter, hit the RKO on him. And Lee's like, nah, what are you saying? I wouldn't have beaten Orton, whatever. So they go back and forth about how, you know, who means what, whatever. Lee's about to say you've got a big target on your back. And before he can say back, who's going to say back while he clapped him on the back and McIntyre knocks away his arms like, don't touch me. So they go back and forth. It's all pissing contest about who's you got a bigger dick. I'm willing to bet Keith Lee has a bigger dick. But maybe I'm stereotyping. Anyway, I don't know why I said that. It's late, folks, and I'm tired. I'm always tired. So they start brawling, and they brawl, and they brawl, and they brawl. Now, Titus wants to get in. Titus O'Neil wants to get into the Raw Underground. Strowman beats Riddick Moss, runs in. He's dumber than a post. And he goes after Strowman. Strowman takes him out again. Titus then just spears him, takes out both legs, and just ground and pound on Strowman. But Strowman like picks him up and does the guillotine choke for like 12 seconds, and out goes Titus. Braun is still standing tall. Who else wants a piece of Braun? Kevin Owens and Aleister Black is in the ring having an actual match. Black now doesn't wrestle in trunks and cool kick pads. He wrestles in like pleather pants. I don't like him. It doesn't look good. And he's not wearing the cool kick pads anymore. Those kick pads were badass. Anyway, he only wears the eye patch as part of his entrance gear. Like, what are you afraid is going to re-injure your eye as you're walking to the ring, but is not going to re-injure your eye as you're having a fight with somebody? That's weird. Anyway, it's a decent match. I don't like going into specifics really, of these matches. Because ultimately, like, I mean, although this one had a clean finish, kind of, the lights start flicking in the arena at the very end. And Owens, Aleister Black starts looking around. Like, I've never seen lights flicker. That's weird. And Kevin Owens takes advantage of the distraction. Hits a stunner for the 1-2-3. So, Keith Lee attacks Drew again backstage. The brawl continues. Adam Pearce is like, I'm going to cancel tonight's main event, and we're just going to not have a main event. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. If you guys don't stop, we're not having a main event. We're just going to go to black at 9:40 p.m. Central Time. Also, the Class of Champions match won't even happen. Remember how we said that you have to defend your title at Clash Night of Clight of Nash of Champions? Well, not if you guys don't stop punching each other. Then there'll be no match tonight. And nope, I'm going to send you to bed without supper. That's what Daddy Scrap Daddy Pierce says. The Riot Squad versus Lana and Natalya with Shayna and Nia on commentary is over real quick because Lana, spoiler alert, still blows in the ring. Yeah. Also, it's a long time ago. It's like 9.5 months ago. So forgive me. You guys might have forgot. Lana and Liv were lesbian lovers last year. At some point. And when Lana was getting married to Bobby Lashley, Lana crashed the wedding. When Liv crashed the wedding of Lana and Bobby Lashley. Yeah, Lana and Bobby Lashley were married. Remember that? That was a thing for a while. Not anymore. Kind of just dropped that entirely. Won't even talk about it anymore because it was that big of a failure. Yeah. Also, big failure. Making Liv a shock value lesbian who had a torrid affair with Lana. And that angle was dropped in about a week and we'll never speak of it again. You'd think that having that big of a revelation 9.5 months ago, having a tag team where each woman is involved in the tag match, now that might be a thing. No, that thing, the horrible thing we did that was so terrible, it was so terrible, we'll never speak of it again. Lana easily loses. Shayna and Nia are on commentary, but not really saying anything because the match is so quick. And then Liv and Riot, they're like, okay, we won, and they go away. And Shayna and Baszler take out all their frustrations on Lana and Natalya. Natalya gets thrown to the ring post, and Lana gets Samoan dropped through the announce table. So I guess that's how you build to a tag team title match. You have the tag team champions beat the hell out of women who they are not feuding with. But, I mean, I guess that's better than beating the hell out of Riot and Liv. So Strowman is being double teamed in Raw Underground by Ziggler and Moss, and he has to fight them both off, and he takes them out again because Riddick Moss, he will not take no for an answer twice. He won't take it again because Ziggler also Ziggler, who they were trying to convince us was top championship material like 2 months ago, is now this scrappy little guy in Raw Underground. That's all he does. He's clawing for the eyes. Strowman just throwing haymakers at people. And then this guy who they were supposed to be, I guess was supposed to, Dabba Kato, who's just this giant, giant guy, is a guy that they threaten to have wrestle people in Raw Underground all the time, but never actually happens. So I guess we're going to do that next week. Strowman versus Dabba Kato next week, which I guess means that it is Raw Underground. Does they have to? Was Raw Underground played by the same rules as Raw? Was this Braun Strowman's one appearance under the brand to brand invitational this quarter? Is next week a different thing because he was on this week, but they invited him during this one to come back next week because there wasn't enough time? It's just, it's so tiring, guys. It really is. Do I want to see Braun Strowman like eat the soul of Dabba Kato more than anything, guys? I really do. Braun Strowman in Raw Underground looks. How does Braun in an extra schmedium t-shirt and like some big old friggin' work gloves? He looks so much more intimidating in that attire than he does, you know, in an actual ring. Like, just, he's so large and so muscular. And they did him such a big, huge favor by shaving his head. Like, the beard of the shaved head, it just looks so good. I don't know what they're going to do with him. I wouldn't, like, if they have a Raw Underground Championship, I want Braun to be the one, the first guy to hold it, and I want him to hold it until the day he retires. I want him to hold the championship for, like, 7 years. I don't want to ever see Braun compete again in anything other than a Raw Underground ring. Is it a ring? There are no ropes. I don't want to see Braun Strowman appear again on anything other than a Raw Underground raised platform. He just throwing haymakers at fools. The thing I hated the most about the first episode of Raw Underground was the dancing girls. To their credit, they got rid of them after the first episode. We haven't seen them again. This still makes no fucking sense. Why is this happening? If this was like its own WWE network show, like for an hour a week, I'd tune in every week, but it doesn't make any sense. It's like part of Raw. It isn't. Why are these men doing it? Are they placing bets on themselves? I don't think they're allowed to like show gambling. I mean, are they? Does that call into question fixed fights and shit like that? So Drew McIntyre versus Keith Lee is a match that doesn't matter. Because they had no intention of ever coming to a conclusion with it, because the match didn't last long enough. The match started too late in the show for them to really think it was actually going to be a real match. It's fun watching these two guys face off. I'm looking forward to seeing them wrestle each other for realsies, but I'm looking forward to it less than I would have if they had just, you know, done a first time ever match at a pay-per-view. That I would have Keith Lee win the Royal Rumble or some shit. Although everyone's like, Big E's going to win the Royal Rumble and challenge Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Well, okay. I hope you're right. I don't think you are. I guess Keith Lee challenging Drew McIntyre for the title at WrestleMania is also probably less than 100% likelihood, but still. Anyway, Retribution stops all the festivities. All of them. Not just Dijakovic and Shane Thorne. and Dio Madden. But so many of them. You'll notice this time none of them are women, which is convenient. So they all come in and they beat the hell out of Lee and McIntyre. And then, again, I'm a big fan of the Hurt Business. I'm a bit of an anti-capitalist in school of thought. But this is a business that I can get behind. They'll come out in suits at the top of the ramp. And they take off their suit jackets and run down to ringside. And the four of them take on, oh, I'm going to say 20 dudes. Now, they don't fare exceptionally well, but they're holding their own long enough for Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre to get to their to regain their senses, get to their feet, and do a tandem tope con hilo over the top rope, which I think all tope con hilos are, and land on the entire pile. So I like the Hurt Business being badasses and defending their home turf, even though they're all super heel. So they're protecting these two nominal baby faces in McIntyre and Keith Lee, but they're also just protecting the idea of Raw. Now, I'm fine with that. I like that they're not like, you know, well, I don't know. I kind of like how Retribution works because, you know, they're beating up guys I don't like and the enemy of my enemy is my friend and blah, blah, blah. I like that they're, you know, being protective of their turf. I like that. Double dive. You know, it's something we've seen. It's fine. It's always impressive when Keith Lee does it. But here's the deal. We go off the air with Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre getting back to their feet. The Hurt Business pretty much laid out. And all of Retribution, like, writhing on the floor. Why is the next thing we see on WWE's Twitter not all of Retribution unmasked? Because Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre and eventually the Hurt Business just walk around among the rubble and start pulling masks off of people. Like, you've just, like, what happens? Tell me what happened right after the show went off the air. Did nobody want to know who these guys are? These guys who've been committing felonies when they've been raiding your program and beating up people? Going back to before the Thunderdome, when they would literally beat the hell out of audience members? None of these, you don't care. Are we supposed to think you don't care? Why don't you care if we're supposed to think you don't? You should show me that you care. It's so weird. It's so weird, you guys. It's so weird that you'd think we don't care. I don't know why it bothers me so much, but it fucking does. What's the next scene? What's the deleted scene? The deleted scene after they all got jumped on. Let's find out who you are. It's the big end of every Scooby-Doo episode. Let's find out who it is under the mask. Old Man Withers! That was Raw. This has been Sour Grabs. I've been your host, Alex Pulowski. This was the 99th episode of Sour Grabs. Next Sour Grabs on Saturday will be the 100th episode of Sour Grabs, which I am going to refer to as the Sour Centennial. And to celebrate, all week on Twitter, at Alex Sour Grabs, send me your questions. Send me your, what do I think about this? How would I book that? What are my all-time feelings about this person? All these types of questions. People have been asking, will I ever do a question and answer podcast? on Saturday, I will do such a podcast. Send me your questions, your queries, your posers at AlexSourGraps on the Twitter. And on Saturday, I will answer them. We will see how many questions I have. It may very well be that I will have so many questions that I will have to do a SmackDown review where I'm like, okay, this match happened, that sucked. This match happened, that sucked. This backstage segment happened, that really sucked. By the way, Otis is still keeping his fucking contract in his goddamn lunchbox. That fucking sucks. All right, on to your questions. And I'll do like an hour of questions. Or maybe I'll get like 4 questions and I'll just save them for the end of the show, you know. But again, Sour Centennial, the 100th episode of Sour Graps, this Saturday on Fightful Select. I hope you'll all tune in to see me answer all of the questions that you're sure to send me. That was Raw in Your Face, and this has been Sour Graps. Everything sucks.